VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Ruck, the Times and Sunday Times weekly podcast. Here for you for the rest of the season and throughout the Lions tour. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. It's free. Please send comments to us. Today's panel, we always try to get you a stellar group of rugby's finest commentators. Sadly, it doesn't always work. But this week, we've got Arthur Lowe of The Times. Alex Lowe of The Times. Always very tempting to name him after his father, Arthur. If you remember, Alex's dad, Arthur, played that great character, Mr. Swindley, in Coronation Street, and also, clearly, Captain Mannering in Dad's Army. Alex, on a somber note, you were involved in a serious incident at Twickenham, which has been known as Shirtgate. Could you explain exactly what happened? Were you attacked when your shirt was ripped off?
I was. I was attacked by the commemorative gates on the West End, the Rose and Poppy gates. Just left having given Ian Ritchie a real tough time at their weekly briefing. And then the RFU got their own back by ripping the back of my shirt off as I left the stadium.
Was it a terminal damage?
It was, yeah.
Okay,
it
well, was. We never liked that shirt anyway. welcome, Alex. Also with us, Adam Hathaway. We like to have someone from the edgy end of the market with us, and there's no one more edgy than Adam. One of the genuine freelance beastie boys and of the red top market. Friday night, Adam, as an owner, owner of the Greyhound Ninja Rascal, who ran at Crayford, was kind enough to give me a tip. He used the expression "nailed on winner." I put a tenner on my account, came second, and actually ran not so much like Ninja Rascal as Ninja Turtle. Any excuses, Ed?
Sorry for making a dent in your Garcia winnings from the Masters. Mm. No excuses, but I'm thinking of sending Eddie Jones down to the kennels because he's a bit like Courtney Laws. We know there's a big dog in there. Eddie's done a trick with Courtney, so maybe you can do the trick with Rascal.
Okay, a little bit too late for my tenner, but there we are. Also, we've got Al Dimmock from Rugby World making a very, very welcome reappearance. Al, just to be serious for a moment, I think as a Scot, not as a token Scot, but as a Scot, we should just say, ask you to comment on the Lions selection. There's been a heck of a lot of bile from Scots since it came out. I was accused of hating Scotland, which was news to my Scottish wife. At least I think it was news to her. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, thank you for chucking me into this minefield. A lot of the problem is that people have decided that there should be some sort of minor level representation. They should have at least a certain number. In my head, I would have, before all the selections were made, I would have said that two was a fair representation. I kind of stick to that as well. The problem is that they've decided that when they chop this up, that there should be that certain level of representation for other nations as well. I think the 50-50 calls, when they've come down to speaking personally, when it comes down to, say, for example, Dan Biggar, the choice of him over, a lot of people are saying Finn Russell, but actually, when you look at it, you could say that it's because it appears like the game plan A is to try and smash up the All Blacks, game plan B is to try game plan A a little bit harder. And if they tried to do something different, it probably would have been George Ford that they'd picked over Finn Russell. However, on the other side of that coin, And I heard Graham Rowntree speak really well about this after the selection. He said, look, there is no quota system. Just because there wasn't a Scottish voice in the room saying we should have this player put forward, that's a valid point, and I think that it's very fair for the coaches to say that. However, you can't know what you can't know. So, for example, when it came down to that 50-50 call, did they know which one of the Scottish players was great to have in a squad when the chips are down? Which guy was always upbeat? Which guy was always great when things were getting tough? The guy who actually chucked, and I hate the word, but chucked around the banter and the changing room. They can't know that sort of finer detail. However, I think it's, look at it, they've only got 5 second rows for the tour. It's a long old tour. Those things are going to change. Scotland are going to be in Singapore for the first week of their tour. That's only a few hours away via flight, so actually things might work out okay when replacements are called in.
Well, I think that's the best summary of that, debunking half of it and upholding the other half that I've heard. So thanks very much, Al. 4 semi-finals on the weekend. I think those people who always insist that necessarily international rugby is better than top club rugby had something to reckon with, because I absolutely loved all 4 games. Alex, you were in Dublin for that amazing game. What are the impressions have you taken away?
Well, the first thing you talk about, Test rugby against European club rugby. One thing you don't get in Test rugby is the colour and the noise that we had in Dublin and in France for the Clermont game. Just an incredible passion, atmosphere, a wonderful friendship. You just don't get that explosion of colour and noise in Test rugby. On the field, Saracens were just, they were Saracens. They were magnificent. It wasn't a free-flowing, thrilling game, but it was compelling. It was intense, and I loved it. And I thought the way Saracens withstood that wave of emotion from Munster, which they were always going to bring.
Don't panic.
But you can't, that doesn't carry you through 80 minutes against a team as pragmatic and defiant as Saracens. And the way they chiselled away, the way they also remained composed, having blown 3 really good chances, which is not, that's a very un-Saracens thing to do, to then pull clear. Second, at half-time, it was always going to be their game, I felt. And Billy Vunipola said afterwards, they're a team that everyone hates. Actually, I think that might have been the case. I think when they relaunched this new Saracens, with the way it happened, the salary cap allegations, all of that kind of stuff, they were a club that people didn't necessarily like. I don't understand now how anyone cannot, at the very least, respect everything they stand for. The players as people, the coaching setup, the innovation that they've brought. They were often a kind of a counterculture club. Ed Griffiths liked, he wanted a red pitch at Allianz Park. He wanted to do everything a bit different, rub people up the wrong way. But those differences, that different approach to management, which I think businesses around the country should follow, the idea that you treat your employees as people and as well as players, which is one of the reasons they're all off good sunning it in Barcelona at the moment. I think they set the standards in Europe.
Adam, amazing. I don't think anyone else would say that the sole arbiter of rugby opinion is Twitter, but there is an amazing ambivalence minimum to Saracens, and I mean, people say something like, yeah, but when they get these 70,000 crowds, some of the tickets are cut price. Well, yeah, do you just want the rugby to be, you know, 200 blokes in suits and ties or something like that? What's your view of Saracens, like, as Alex said, picking up on this, people are kind of ambivalent towards them?
It's complete jealousy. What they do at Wembley once a year, when they get, or it's only 70,000 this year, it's normally 80 because it clashed with the Bath game at Twickenham. It's fantastic, and if they're letting people in for nothing, who gives a monkeys? It's more people who are watching the game. As for their methods are slightly different to other clubs, and they are all on the res in Barcelona at the moment, and good luck to them if they're European champions, and they probably will be again this year.
Well, I think the interesting one is, we talked about the level of players they've got, and it's, you know, saying don't panic is actually quite a lot of it, because Owen Farrell's always going to keep you in a game of rugby, be it Test rugby or elite European rugby. He's always going to keep you in the mix. And you know, Munster, for all they did, they played right into Saracens' hands. You know, the sheer number of passes they gave were not enough. One-out runners to players like CJ Stander, as impressive as he is not the way that you play against Saracens. You know, they've got good young halfbacks, and Duncan Williams has had a fine season. A lot of people have talked about Conor Murray and his injuries and whether he's going to be fit for the Lions or not. But actually, Duncan Williams has had a fine season. But him and Blaine Dow, as much as they tried to move everything about, they needed to use the ball more. And Saracens just ate that up.
I think actually that there was a heck of a noise, and the Munster fans were brilliant. But I think the noise slightly wavered when people realised that this relentless hammer that Munster were doing, actually Saracens were completely unfazed. They got up and regrouped. The defence, you know, Paul Gustgard, the defensive coach, is gone, yet they're defending as well as anyone. Yes, Al?
And there's one more thing of that as well. And people talk about Saris and how they've got all these big name players that are worth a lot of money. Actually, their player of the season has probably been Michael Rhodes so far, and he is just an absolute warrior. He's always seems to be the second player that's there when another member of the team makes a break, and he epitomises everything that's been fantastic about them this season, and he deserves more accolades.
I've got player I think that deserves more accolades as well, because he's close to now, in my opinion, being the most remarkable player I've ever seen. That's Schalk Britz. I mean, the guy is now not in the first flush of youth. When he starts, he plays really well. When he comes on, he infallibly makes a difference to that game. And the guy's got such talent. He's got pace, he's got great hands, he's got vision, he's also a really decent hooker. And I just think we should enjoy this guy while he's there, because I think he's an absolute force of nature. And I'd pay to watch Schalk if he's playing. I don't care if the other 29 are not very good. Let's just reflect on the Lions a second, because we can't not talk about the Lions. Whatever do we have on the weekend that party was either wrong or correct? Alex?
Well, I'll just mention Stander. I think he just came back from injury, and he scored the try at the end, but he was playing number 8 against opposite Billy Vunipola, and the performances were poles apart. I thought the Irish reporters were telling me that he's still struggling with that ankle injury, so he had no power, he couldn't accelerate off it. Well, that was plain to see, because you look at the way that Billy drags his team with him compared to Stander, who I thought had a poor game. They definitely missed Murray in that game. His control at the bases and his kicking game is huge.
I'd say that I'm pleased to hear that Stander was injured or not quite his best, because he was completely and utterly obliterated from the game. And actually, I thought O'Mahony had no nothing really there at all. So I hope they were both injured. And Al, front row, your area of expertise, just going on to Claremont. Yeah. Was it rather disturbing to see the Claremont pack occasionally turn over the two Lions props up there?
Well, yeah, I mean, those of me that know me, they'll know that I've had a sort of long-standing love affair with Davit Zirakashvili, who's the Georgian tight head for Claremont.
That, actually, we didn't like to mention it.
And well, I mean, I've never met the guy. I actually once wrote a study of him from afar, which sounds a bit like I'm a stalker. Well, I think I kind of am for Datto, as he's known. And he and Claremont, they've just got this incredible pack. The way that they can play, it seems like they've been around forever. Zirakashvili looks about 90. He's actually only 33 years old. And these guys, I think what a lot of people are saying in Ireland is that it's a cumulative fatigue for guys like Jack McGrath, who's put in a long season, you know, a lot of performances in Europe and for Ireland. But it really showed at the end of the game. And Claremont just have these monsters that they can bring off the bench.
Is he married? Datto?
Datto is married, yes.
He is married. Unlucky there, mate. There we go.
There were a few performances from players who weren't picked in the Lions who might be regretful that the squad wasn't being picked this week rather than last week. Gary Ringrose being one of them. Simon Zeebo, another one, who in Dublin I thought was excellent. I thought Alex Goode had a very good game for Saracens, but Zeebo was particularly good for Munster. So if the squad was being picked this week, the clamour for those two would be pretty great, I think.
I mean, you mentioned earlier that there might be moments of the weekend. I think Gary Ringrose's try for Leinster is one of the tries of the season. It's like he's got hips made of jelly. Just the way that he managed to slip through that gap, chuck a dummy and race through. I mean, he could be called in if there are injuries with the Lions, but I think the thing is that everyone can agree on is this kid's future is ridiculous.
It always feels lazy to just go, oh, he's the new Brian O'Driscoll. But every time he plays, it seems almost impossible to not make those comparisons, because he does, the way he runs, the way he finds space, that try he scored took you straight back to that Lions test
against Australia.
Against Australia, yeah. 2001. It's just, there's just something about him that really does mirror the way that O'Driscoll played the game.
I'll be not going off the high board on Ringrose, so that's 3-1 in favour of Ringrose. I won't be going off the high board for a bit. I don't think he was quite there, but I've been proved wrong before once. any Lions stood up for you, Adam?
Well, from Dublin, the obviously the two Vunipola brothers, we all love them, but
just
I thought Itoje had an absolute stormer, back to his best, because he's had a couple of quiet games, especially when he was playing at six during the Six Nations. He's got to stay fit for that tour. Yeah. I think he's straight in the test team. So Gatland will be keeping his fingers crossed over the next couple of weeks. He was absolutely astonishing.
Right, let's just move on. It'd be very, very remiss not to mention Gloucester's excellent win at La Rochelle. They are the top of the French table. Gloucester went there and won, and what a great effort for them, and their supporters get a day out for the Shield, the Challenge Cup final on Friday nights in Edinburgh. So that's absolutely fantastic. As for Bath, absolutely staggering game against Stade Francais. Bath were well out of it. They were getting hammered. They came surging back, and Stade Francais was suddenly getting hammered. Then we had this absolutely awful George Ford nightmare at the end, where for some reason I don't understand, they went for a short kickoff, onside kick, as they call it in American football, didn't go 10. They then mucked up the next play horrendously. George sadly missed the kick that would take them to extra time. Anyone, any thoughts on that? Because Bath must be sore as hell.
I've got one question actually, and it's for the older gentlemen in the rooms. How do you feel about the resurgence of the drop goal? Because this is a weekend where, for Clermont, there was a couple for Camille Lopez. Plisson scored a beautiful drop goal to edge Stade away, and that. I mean, Hathers, how do you feel about seeing the resurgence of the drop goal?
Well, you spying on me last night, because I've done a bit of research on this. Last season in the Premiership, there were just 4 drop goals in the entire campaign. This season, Premiership clubs have scored 9 drop goals in every competition. George Ford's got 4 of them. It seems to have gone out of fashion. But as yesterday showed, it's a great way of keeping the scoreboard going over. I mean, just ask Johnny Wilkinson. England lived on that for a while.
OK, next, something bizarre happened last week. Eddie Jones spent ages justifying or explaining his selection for the England tour of Argentina. And after an hour's explanation, no one was any the wiser. It's either a bunch of the older players in their 30s or a bunch of real youngsters. As Blackadder once said, never mind Pitt the Younger, this is Pitt the Even Younger and Pitt the Embryo. Two Curry twins, the Times told us about them the other week. Is it Piers Brosnan, the number 8? the fly half?
Piers Francis.
Yeah,
Piers Francis.
Mean, I have to say, joking apart, what Josh Beaumont, Danny Cipriani, Dan Robson, Joe Simpson, Tom Taylor, and all these guys who are allegedly queered their pitch in some way, what they think about it is nobody's business. I think it's grossly unfair. I think there's an explanation which doesn't hold water. Adam, you're going down as our representative in Argentina. Yep. What do you make of it?
I'm as flabbergasted as you, even 4 days on or whatever it is. I mean, there's even guys like Timana Harrison, who was in the Six Nations training squad. Mike Williams seems to have been chucked out with the washing. I don't know what sort of conversation Eddie had with these lads, because if you're in an EPS squad that was announced on New Year's Eve, you probably think you've got a fair chance, with 16 blokes going on the Lions tour, you probably think you've got a fair chance of going to Argentina with England. And instead, he's brought in 15 uncapped players, a handful of teenagers, and I just can't work it out.
Aldemek, just a huge raft of...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Players left at home, where you think that he would love to be out there, to have them out there with the coaches working.
Well, I think the thing as well is that they're only taking two hookers and they're only taking two scrum halves with them, which for experience for some people, if you've got these guys that are on the fringes, you mentioned Tommy Taylor there, for example, you know, he seems to have been leapfrogged by Luke Cowan-Dickie, but to think that you can have a player get in front of you in the pecking order but still be able to train with them to show your worth, particularly on a tour abroad, which he won't have had the experience of, you know, those are the kind of things where you can shape a player's future. To chuck them out and not have them in and then say, actually, what happens if we've got an injury, if someone goes down a training, then you've got to haul someone out. That's the thing. Dan Robson at scrum half as well. And you think, this is a valuable experiences for these guys.
The other thing is, talking of experience, he's got guys there with 70-odd caps who surely he must know all about them.
I don't disagree with taking... I think you take your strongest side. It is an international match. You're betraying the ethos if you don't pick the strongest side you got. I don't mind them coming, but surely, you know, Danny Kerr's been around ages. Surely we should have found out whether Dan Robson can step up there. You know, I just think it really, really infuriating.
I think there are some omissions, and you wonder whether Eddie has now made his final decision. He's decided that Marlon Yard isn't going to cut it for him through to the World Cup. Has he decided Timon Harrison isn't going to cut it to him through to the World Cup? So there's a few there. Mike Williams, who's trained with them for the whole year, is now not going again. Has he just decided he's actually not good enough? So there's a group that's the only conclusion you can really draw. There are other young players who I think are right to be involved. I know that the England set up have a feeling that Izzy Ekwe, this 19-year-old Saracens lock, has every chance of being one of these bolters that squeezes into the World Cup squad. If that's their view, it's a good chance to go and have a look at him. Nathan Earle's another. It's a good chance to look at him. But I just think there are too many holes in the selection that don't... That you can't join up the dots. And the explanations, as ever, with Eddie, aren't good enough to give a full explanation as to what his thinking is. I think you can pick a very strong team out there while also giving some chances to players like Alex Azowski, who I think is a perfect opportunity for him to start a test match. But there are others. Piers Francis, for example, who's not young. I'm not quite sure why he's going. His whole year has been based around playing for the Auckland Blues against the Lions.
Having seen him play for Edinburgh, I'm as perplexed as you are.
Well, he's missing that opportunity. He's going to go on tour, but he's behind George Ford, Alex Azowski, Henry Slade, Sam James. I cannot see him at the moment, given the age profile which Eddie put so much stock in, making the World Cup squad. And so there are too many bemusing selections for me.
Can I have a crack at the suits here as well? Because where I think they've fouled up the tour for Eddie is that they should have had an extra game. When we went there in 2013, they had a game in Uruguay in the middle of the jungle, which is fantastic, which is when you could find out about these younger players, because Steve's right. They're going to play Test rugby, so let's win them as well.
The midweek games, people have turned up their noses now, but God, over the years we've found such valuable information from those games. Alright, so Adam, we look forward to your reports and look forward to the answer to all these questions that we're asking. I just want to move on to something else now. I've got some unlikely heroes to put to you, panel. I'm just thinking of the refereeing of the two games, the two big games on Saturday, and refereeing lately. I don't think refereeing has ever been in such good hands at the very top level. The World Cup was well done. And when you are at a place like the Aviva Stadium and you see what refs have to put up with, every time there was a contact by a Saracens player, for instance, 50,000 people all roared as if it was a savage assault. It's very difficult not to react to it. I thought Romain Poit was absolutely outstanding. I would add to his name, obviously, Wayne Barnes, Nigel Owens, Romain Poit, obviously, Jérôme Gassez, Pascal Gauzer, and Jaco Paper. I mean, that's most of them are Northern Hemisphere, but just some terrific referees, and I'm the biggest critic of refs. I really admire them. Thought Nigel Owens had an excellent game. I thought he and the TMO got the key decision. Now,
absolutely right when Aurélien Rougerie was clearly obstructed and they went through the hole there. Now, lads, I know it goes against the grain, but am I correct here? And also, am I correct in thinking there's a huge gap to the others? But these guys are superstars in their way.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And some of the names, I think one of the things as well is that these guys, as modern referees, are approachable. They've got a good rapport with the players. I think that's actually so much of it. You can't watch a game that Wayne Barnes is in and not hear him talking to people at the breakdown, letting people know exactly where they stand. Because sometimes, you know, if you're completely authoritarian and people, that's when people say, why was that decision given? And that's where you get the rancour with fans. I think they all have differing styles as well. That's the thing. There's no one box ticked by every single one of them that's exactly the same. So, for example, Owens is famous for letting the game play, and we will see him in the Champions Cup final because obviously Barnes and the French referees cannot referee those finals. However, you know, he lets the game go. Barnes has got a good intuitive nature with the players. Poit is fantastic with the scrum. You know, I just think they all offer something different. And you're right, it's a brilliant time to be a player with these referees.
Adam, you're a laws expert. What do you think?
Well, the only thing that disappoints me is when referees start coaching players. If a bloke's offside, just penalise him. Instead of telling him to.
Oh, no, I agree with that. Al's saying, you know, communication is everything. But I agree. I just think that if you're saying to a guy, right, number six, stop lying on the ball, well, you've given him two chances and he's laid on the ball, that's a penalty. Why should you get two chances? Alex, a front row citizen like yourself, you a wide ranging view of the game from up there. What do you think of the referees at the moment?
I would agree with you. I think if you look at. I think Nigel Owens was absolutely the right man to do the last World Cup final. Mm. I think if the next World Cup was now, Wayne Barnes would get that gig, assuming England weren't in it. I thought, if you go back to Six Nations, the way he handled that whole episode in Paris, just clear thinking, good communication, under immense pressure, because it was a unique situation for players and Wayne Barnes himself. I think he now sets the standards for them all. The scrum is a fascinating area of the game, which is really hard to referee, because you can only stand on one side. But I think they now work better as a team than ever. These teams of officials, their communication is great. Mm. Communication with the TMO, as you mentioned in the Claremont game, they just work well to make the right decisions, and I agree that the top team are probably better than they have been. There is a drop off for sure, but yeah, these guys who are going to be in charge of the big games at the big end of competitions are magnificent.
It's great, because over the years we've just been sat there panicking the referee's going to decide it. You know, I'd add Luke Pearson, JP Doll in my own opinion, but not everybody might agree with that. So well done, referees, keep going, and I'm sorry for all those years we criticised you.
Andre Watson anymore?
Well, that's not even funny. Okay, we're going to move on now to the Guinness Pro 12. I think they got 21 lines between them from that division, which is not bad. Always a bone of contention, the Pro 12, because I don't think it's as honestly played as the Premiership, but in the sense that, you know, your best team's your best team, and you have to field it and batter through when there's no relegation or etc. And when qualification is easy, you don't. But having said that, it's going to be a great climax to the season. On the final week, rather cleverly, the marketeers have, this is on May the 6th, by the way, it's all derbies. So we got Treviso Zebre, Munster Connaught, Scarlets Ospreys, Edinburgh Glasgow, Ulster Leinster, Newport versus Cardiff, or rather the Dragons versus the Blues. Now, that is an obvious market employ, but really good. Looking forward to that. This week, it's Ospreys versus Ulster. Ospreys are down. They have to pull themselves up because they are fourth in the table. If they win this, they should go through to the playoffs. Al, what's the current state of play? Some of it is exciting, some of it not?
Some of it is. I mean, I think the two Irish provinces that you saw in the semi-finals of the Champions Cup there have been almost entirely running the show for the full season. They've done fantastically well. I think that as I mentioned last time I was on this podcast, Leinster are top of the are top of the league for a reason, because they've got all these young guys that shone in that game in the Champions Cup there at the weekend, because they have this level of talent, whereas Munster have been just raw passion for the entire year and everyone's been caught up in it, neutrals alike. I think the thing is that actually when it comes down to the playoffs, there is a bit of a section there. So you mentioned Ospreys and Ulster, those guys have still got something to play for. Glasgow look like they're out of it, out of the running for the playoffs. However, if they perform well and defeat Leinster on Friday night, they can actually do Munster a favour and let Munster leapfrog Leinster if Munster do well at the weekend themselves. So there's still some shaking about to go. You're right about Ospreys and Ulster. These two teams in the Pro 12 for the last few years have flattered to deceive. Ulster just seem to have had this horrible barren patch. Ospreys have had a hiccup of late and they need to get their finger out to get going. You mentioned the Lions that are in there. I think for a lot of these teams, because it's almost completely decided at the top of the table, performances are to get in good form for going on that plane to New Zealand.
I just wish that the Pro 12 would stop mooting ridiculous partnerships like with South Africa and North America, which plainly don't work.
Well, I think
and
the thing,
work to get a London presence in the tournament.
I mean, they could have that if they really wanted. I think the thing is actually it's when they talk about. It's almost people flying a kite when they talk about South Africa and America. I remember getting in touch with someone in America to say, look, have you heard anything about this? From one of the major cities that they were talking about, they said, no one has got in touch with us of this. Yeah. It's just throwing something up the flagpole and seeing how people react to it. But I suppose the thing is, actually, it's more important than any of that is for them to sort out what's going on in Italy. Because at the moment, they've got Sebri, who players not getting paid, players getting mistreated, players not knowing what their future is, guys dropping out halfway through the season to retire and go back to the country they came from because they'd rather that than stay at the club. There's a lot of talk going about saying, why do they not have a franchise in Rome? Because people would much rather go for a long weekend in Rome than they would to go into Parma. Parma's lovely, by the way. I have absolutely no problem with Parma whatsoever. But I think they need to sort out their house before they start chucking out and saying, well, maybe we can start streaming games on this social media platform. Maybe we can start playing games abroad as the Premiership have done, because they just don't have the foothold yet.
Yeah, exactly. Sort yourself out first, and just one thing. We come to Arthur in a minute, but these zebra young forwards, Adam. How do you rate them?
Isn't all this Italy thing that Al's talking about? Isn't that part of Conroy Show's remit? He's going to go down there, try and concentrate all the Italian players in one team, and just use them as a sort of Italian squad feeder.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Ben Kay did a column in the Times just before the England-Italy game in which he was proposing exactly that, that the idea that Italy's best way forward is to try and copy what Argentina are doing, which is tricky for Argentina because they're losing players. The old Facundo Issa has left Argentina because he's got a big contract in Europe. But in general, the idea that if you concentrate the Italian national team into one franchise, you can then you have coaching continuity, you have familiarity, and it would be the best thing for Italian rugby and for Italy's presence in the Pro 12.
I think one of the problems with that actually is that a large part of what goes on in Italian rugby below the top tiers is in some respects, some minor respects, similar to what happens in South Africa, and that people operate in regions. So when you come to that, these people all get a say in where the future goes. So for example, there's a junior academy with some of the finest young players in Italy near Parma. So you've got that. And then how do you say from that, right, okay, you've got to travel to this part of the country, you've got to travel to that part. And when I went out to Italy to sit down with Conor Shea and Stephen Aboud, who looks after youth and the levels of rugby and looking after coaching and the such, like, the problem is that they want to take what they've got and improve on it. Do they want to get a stability there before they move on? I think a lot of people were talking about throwing the baby out with the bathwater with a lot of that, and there's reticence with that. However, if Pro 12 make a decision in the next couple of years when the contracts are up to say, well, look, we strongly suggest you have a different franchise somewhere else, then it all comes up for discussion.
Thank you. I think Adam was interested on the zebra young forwards there.
Yeah, thanks for that, Steve. I was watching them on video last night.
No, I know. You were talking about it before we came on. Just go to the Premiership, lads. We're at the sharp end of it now. Battle for the big four, last four is very much on. Sadly, Bristol, the die's cast for them. They go back down. I'm sure they'll bounce straight back. London Irish almost certain to join the Premiership. Not yet certain at all that that Saracens will be in the top.
They've got Bristol and Wasps to play. You could probably see Wasps and Exeter both. Sorry, Exeter winning their last two games. I think Saracens might finish up third, but you wouldn't bet against them going anywhere and winning in a semi-final.
Well, I'm going to Exeter this week in Northampton, and however great Saris are, they will have to be flat out if they go away to Exeter. There's no doubt about that. Alex, how do you see it?
Yeah, I would agree. Exeter had a slow start, didn't they, to the season, but they've picked up now. I just think Saracens have this. You know, if they can go to the Aviva Stadium and quieten 50,000 Munstermen, they can go to Sandy Park. I mean, I'm not saying they would necessarily; wouldn't be a walkover, but they have it, and they just have that momentum. And who is it who talked after the game? Mako. It was Mako who talked after the game about they're in this to create their own legacy, and they've got every chance now of. Think of the great English club teams who've dominated their era, Bath and Leicester and Saracens now. They just have, as we discussed at the top of the podcast, they just have everything about them that I wouldn't bet against them winning anywhere.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Saris is that they're, particularly at the moment, teams go through peaks and troughs throughout a season. They are rampant at the moment. Yeah. And to give them two games run up to the playoffs to sort of fine tune things, they will absolutely sort it out. And you're right, you wouldn't bet against them anywhere in the league in a one-off game. But also the other thing is, looking at the way Wasps have played over the last few weeks and months, is they really need to sort out their defence. If they're going to have any chance of being in the mix come that final, they have to sort out their defence, because they can score points and they can play as flashy as they like, but if they keep shipping them, that's not going to look any good.
Totally agree. And if Wasps were to beat Saracens, it would be something like 56-55 or something like that, wouldn't it? Adam, in my opinion, I don't know if you agree, but Sale right down near the bottom of the table, so too Worcester. Seen both these teams lately and absolutely thought they were excellent. I thought Worcester really had something. Is this the strongest this Premiership has been? Because all the way down there's some decent sides.
It's probably the strongest 11, and I think if London Irish do come up, they'll probably be a better team than Bristol have been this year. Worcester, we were at that Worcester game a couple of weeks ago against Bath. They were terrific. I don't know what they're doing down 10th and 11th in the Premiership. Sale, very hard to beat at home. Probably should have had some more lads going to Argentina, but that's another matter. It's been a very good standard this year.
And I think a club like Sale, when you look at who they've signed now on five-year contracts at the academy that's producing the Curry brothers, Sam James, Mike Haley, they've got a young crop of players there, Josh Beaumont,
sure,
who could really take that club forward. And actually, I'm not suggesting they might win the Premiership as they did back in the day, but they can make an imprint for the Premiership in the North and really have them challenging at the top of the table.
That's the Ruck this week. Thanks very much for listening. Thank you to Adam Hathaway, Alex Lowe, Al Dimmock. Been a pleasure, guys.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.